Welcome to the Motherhood Podcast, where I lift the lid on the real, raw, and honest stories of motherhood. I'm your host, Samantha Morell. Storytelling is a fundamental part of the human experience. Hearing the challenges and struggles that others have encountered and overcome helps us make sense of our own lives and feeling and fosters a feeling of connectedness and inclusion. But today, we mother largely in isolation and have been robbed of essential parts of the mothering experience. I hope these stories will make you feel less alone. I also hope that they inspire and empower you to mother your own unique way, to support you on your path of thriving in motherhood and beyond. We're all in it together. Let's do this. Before we get into today's episode, I want to highlight the potentially triggering topic that we'll be discussing. Today's guest, Lucy Wilde, bravely shares her experience with domestic violence. Lucy tells us of the abuse she suffered in the form of coercive control. I'll share some links in the show notes for where you can access help if you or someone you know is experiencing domestic violence. Lucy discusses this abuse by her partner, which appeared shortly after her daughter was born, how it manifested and the signs that something was seriously wrong. She talks about being her own hero and the moment she realised she needed to leave the relationship. We end with Lucy sharing how she's now thriving as a solo mother. I hope today's episode highlights the incredible resilience that Lucy has to come through such a challenging experience to now loving life as a mama. Here it is. I'm thrilled to be joined today by Lucy Wilde. Lucy lives in Reading in the UK and is a solo mama of an eight-year-old daughter. She's a birth recovery coach and a highly experienced pregnancy and postnatal exercise specialist, advanced yoga teacher, baby massage instructor, and massage therapist. Her work and passion lives in helping new mums to thrive in body and mind, and not just survive. In her spare time, she loves to go on long country walks, read, cook, and dance. Lucy's here today to talk about her experience with domestic violence whilst becoming a newborn mother. I'm so grateful Lucy's trusted me with her story, and I'm honoured that she's with us today. Lucy, thank you so much for being here today. As I said, it's an absolute honour to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. It really is such an honour to be invited on and to talk to you. So, yeah, thank you for having me.
Great. So I'm going to dive straight in. This podcast is all about telling stories, telling diverse stories and different experiences. So can you tell us about your experience as a new mum and entering new motherhood and how that was for you?
Yeah, sure. It's funny, I feel nervous and shaky, but I know I want to share my story. I have this sometimes when I talk from seeing me on calls. So I found the start to motherhood tremendously hard. I was just so ready to become a mum, and I'd been working in the pre and postnatal realm for a few years before I got pregnant, and I remember being aching to be a mum and knew I was ready. And what led to part of the difficulty being a mum was my traumatic birth experience having Tilly. And it's nuts because I was so looking forward to birth. I had a friend who described how birth was so gorgeous for her, and we did a hypnobirthing course. And what was funny was that my now ex-husband was like, are you kidding? We're not going to have the baby at home. And then he was swayed to understand and really like the idea of having Tilly at home and things like that. But anyway, so the birth was long and complications happened in that they cut my bladder during the C-section. I was hoping for a home birth. They cut my bladder during the C-section. So that meant that I had a catheter for a month. I remember the gynecologist or someone coming in and saying, oh, I'm so sorry, you're going to have a catheter for 2 weeks. And then they told me it was a month. And I was like, okay, it was so hard. And then I had a womb infection because of the I think because of the intrusion of the catheter within my body, that then led to, yeah, womb infection. And I had panic attacks soon after leaving hospital and things like that as well, all due to, I think, the intensity of what happened, really. And then it was just so desperately hard because my ex-husband was going on an ultra run. He wanted to do an ultra run in Chile called the Atacama Crossing when Tilly was a few weeks old. And I don't remember the date of it, but it ended up being 3 weeks after Tilly was born that he left. And so he was probably quite stressed about the lead up to that. It's a massive thing, like a marathon a day for about five days, I think it was. And so when Tilly arrived, he was sleep deprived, we were sleep deprived because I've been trying to have her for days. And I remember having my C-section, being in bed, sore, and I asked him to get my medication and he was grumpy and he threw the door back like on its hinges and went to get it for me. And it was like, I remember feeling crushed. I can still picture it in my head. As much as I've worked through stuff, I can picture how hard that was. In my mind, that made out that I didn't matter, but here I was with a massive incision and he had an effing run to go and do, which he wanted to do, which he'd signed up and he'd paid thousands to do. In retrospect, I don't know why I said that was okay to do, because this was our first child and how's about shifting your priorities? But yeah, so it was so hard to be treated that way, to be so desperately vulnerable. I was already pretty crushed from trying to have Tilly at home for days. Labour was 5 days long and just day after day trying, and the contractions still coming and I wasn't dilating, and midwife after midwife coming and giving me a sweep and still not dilated. And then to go into hospital to labour all day long there, to be told that I needed to have a C-section, I remember again was pretty... It was, yeah, really hard to take. I remember the form in front of me signing it when I never thought that would happen. And then the complication of obviously the bladder being cut and things like that. So very hard. And that was the immediate start. Yeah. It took me a while to realise that I had PTSD. No one told me I did. I was like, I'm grumpy. I'm short-tempered. I'm agitated. I think this is PTSD. I feel like I was my own hero because no one really waded in to say, you're suffering, aren't you? It was really hard to have such a lack of support, not just the lack of support, but the active neglect, abuse, mistreatment, which I wouldn't wish on anyone.
Yeah. I just want to go back to that point that you made. You said, I was my own hero. That phrase really resonated with me. I just really felt that in my body there. Is that something that you felt at the time, or in retrospect, looking back, you felt your own hero in the way that you were able to advocate for yourself?
I'd say in retrospect, definitely. Yeah, because I realised the depth and the darkness of the situation I was in. And I don't really blame anyone who was around me and could have helped, let's say in inverted commas, because they couldn't see, or conditioning doesn't teach us to look out for different warning signs and things like that. But I do feel like I was in a very tricky situation, and I do feel really quite proud of myself, to say the least, for escaping and not putting up and listening. And really, I was able to listen to the truth and the glimmers of hope and the glimmers of, this isn't right, Luce. You're speaking up from within.
Gosh. So it sounds like you were that connection with that inner voice, your inner knowing, or your intuition, the different phrases we use for that. Is that something that you were already connected with before you were pregnant or earlier in your life? Or is that something that you feel came through during the labour process?
Yeah, I think it did come through. I think I don't really remember it much in my past, it really probably had to speak up the most at this point, really, because it was really a case of life or death, I feel like saying, and that's very dark to say. There were definitely times when I knew I couldn't go on with the current situation. I remember walking to the playground opposite our flat when I was struggling for a long time, actually, with my marriage, and falling to my knees in front of my friend and just saying, we separate or it's suicide. I've never said that on a podcast before, and I'm quite new to expressing all of this, but I just could not carry on with the pain. It was one or the other. And I didn't for a second plan to end my life, but it was just like, I cannot carry on with this. I knew I had to take action to separate. And I think it was around that time that I went to the doctors and I had a bit of a breakdown, a massive cry, and just shared what I was struggling with. And I've got the notes from the doctor, and I printed them out at some point just to prove what was going on, that it wasn't pleasant at home. It was very tough, very tough.
At that point when you went to your GP, was that, how old was Tilly at this point? Just looking backwards on having that breakdown at the playground and then going to your GP, what was the lead up to that?
Tilly was probably about 18 months. I remember going to the nursery when Tilly was two and expressing to them that I was trying to leave my ex-husband. I explained an episode that had happened at home, and in case Tilly was expressing any upset because he'd shown some anger and we were both quite shaken from it. And before that, I think I had just been in some form of denial, really, just cracking on, carrying on, coping with the totally substandard care. And it wasn't full on horrible all the time, but what I realized when I left was just how toxic the different little things were. The fact that he never wanted to hear how my day was, or I wanted to converse and say, how was your day? And he was too grumpy to comment and too tired and just wanted to watch TV. And when I'd explained how, I don't know, Tilly'd had a meltdown and it was really hard, there was just no acknowledgement of that, of what I was dealing with day to day. And it's still slightly uncomfortable for me to talk about this because I don't like to speak unkindly of people, but this is someone who I feel very sad for my new mummy self at times, ruined my start to motherhood. I know the birth was a factor, but to come away from a birth like that, to then have a partner shout at me, was just taking someone, kicking them when they're down. I wrote a poem about him shouting at me, and it says, he shouted, why aren't you over it? And that was him shouting, why aren't you over it, about the birth experience. I can picture in the home that Tilly was brought home to, me with her in my arms, him expecting me to be further on than I was after a deeply traumatic experience. You try being in full-blown contractions for days on end. It was earth-shattering pain, and at the end of it, I was cut open. It was not easy. But to answer your question, yeah, the things that built up with that was, yeah, just the day-to-day difficulties, the lack of relief, the lack of praise. I think there was, I can't say it was all tremendously dark, because there must have been times when he was more pleasant and it was easier. And I had two good mummy friends that I'm not in touch with anymore. They were my rock, absolutely. We got close very quickly and it was great to have them to save my sanity. But yeah, feeling very unheard and unseen, which I know now are two tremendously important things. You need to be heard, you need to be seen, especially by your partner.
Indeed, and those early mama newborn days, the vulnerability is intensified, isn't it? And I can really hear what a deeply traumatic experience that must have been for you. And I just want to touch on coming back to, had this long labour, traumatic birth, and everything that goes with that, and then coming home to your partner, and you said that he had this ultra run coming up, and him, and that was obviously something that you believe that he was more focused on, and perhaps sounds like your priorities were in different places at that time. And then you talk about him shouting at you, why aren't you over it? Was that when Tilly was quite small? I'm just trying to get the picture of what he was like when you came, a little bit more colour to the picture of what he was like when you came home from hospital and those sort of early days, weeks there.
Yeah, Tilly was a few weeks old then, maybe, I don't know, maybe roughly 12 weeks. Yeah, and he did his best. And I understand from his background and different things like that why it would have been hard to be better. But as I say, from my point of view, it was just so desperately hard. I think one of the things that really stuck with me was, excuse me, was when, let's go back to the birth. So it was, I think we were both so shell-shocked from having so many days in labour to then come home. And this is a guy who needs sleep. I think when I was in hospital with Tilly, he then went home and did sleep and then came back and, with clothes for Tilly and stuff like that. And that was really lovely. We got to meet her finally after such a long process. And then we were just, yeah, coping. But the grumpiness was just so hard to deal with. And I can only try and understand how it must be to have a partner who's traumatized and to have to step up and be the breadwinner, the provider, and an emotional pillar for someone still reeling from birth. But I don't believe I was ever given any space to really process that birth experience. It was parked for a long time. And then even when I got counselling, so I had therapy, I'm trying to think how soon after having Tilly it was. It would have been when she was still breastfeeding, because I remember thinking about the struggle of having a slot, having an hour by myself where she wasn't on the boob. So I think my ex-husband would have had to come into town with me and be in the cafe downstairs from the therapy rooms. But even that was a struggle to get that time for me. Like, he would just, it seemed like nothing could be easy for me to do. I needed that time to talk to the lady, and that was met with grumps. Yeah, it was really hard. And the thing is, I knew I needed that, but, and this is where I take accountability for how I was. I was like, oh, no, it's okay. I don't matter. Time and time again, for whatever reason, that's how I felt. So I didn't speak up for myself in certain ways. And I'm aware of that. But counselling was something I knew I needed. It was so fucking profound to have this hour to myself, to close the door, to be in a room with Maura, and to be able to talk about me after everything else being about Tilly and everything else being about him. Obviously, my daughter was my world and she's dependent on me, but I needed to have something for me where I was able to speak about the experience. And I remember my therapist's face looking so sad for me about what I'd been through, about the grumpiness that I was met with as well. And because the birth was really traumatic, I went to an osteopath to get seen to probably about a week after having Tilly. And I can remember saying to my ex-husband, do you want to bring Tilly? Do you want to sit in the waiting room? Or do you want to walk around outside while I'm there? Probably because I knew that a newborn baby would need me. But he decided to stay home. And I was in with the osteopath for an hour and a bit because she was so kind. She overran for me because she knew I'd been through a lot. So I went, I presented with, I don't know, just super vulnerable after birth, but also my jaw had this buzzing sensation, and that was because the jaw correlates with the pelvis, and the pelvis was still reeling from everything that happened. And she was like, that makes sense. And then actually, do you know what? I can remember she had her hands around my back and she said, I can feel a lot of heat. And that was just before they detected that I had a womb infection. So she was able to pick up what was happening before I even went to the doctors, that they found I had a womb infection. But anyway, so I was in there for, I don't know, an hour and a half. I put my phone off, which I, at the time, beat myself up about afterwards. because I just knew I needed to switch off. It was quite an episode that I'd been through, obviously. And then I put my phone on when I came out, bing, bing, messages, voicemail. And then I was trying to pay a reception with this, like with my phone giving it off loads of notifications. I was shaking because I could tell it was from my husband at the time, or a partner at the time, we weren't married yet. And I listened to a voicemail urgently and I could just hear Tilly crying. And he said, get back here now, or get back here, please, as soon as possible. And so I rushed out. And I couldn't run because I'd had a C-section. This was a week after. And I jumped on the soonest bus I could, all the while, heart racing, really upset, just because I could hear my baby crying. And I got back, rushed off the bus as quick as you can with the C-section scar, and got in and sat down, got my boobs out, and she was on the boob and fine after, like, latching on and feeding and stuff. But the face he gave me, look of thunder, oh my god. And it was so hard. I felt so upset. I remember texting my mum saying, I feel so bad, Tilly's been crying, I was at the osteopath. And then a kind of voice in my head said, but you did tell him you could come, you did say, do you want to wait outside? So it wasn't all my fault. He gave me this look of thunder, frowned like hell as I came in, but I sat down, she was soothed, things got a bit better. But it was just like, why didn't you listen? Why didn't you come? Why didn't you make things easier? And it was, yeah, that was just one of the episodes.
Thank you, Lucy. I can really hear how hard that must have been for you as a new mum, leaving a baby, and that visceral need to be close to your baby, and that it's a physical reaction, isn't it? I could really hear that. And you're so vulnerable, as I keep saying, as a new mum. And it sounds like the grumpiness and the resistance for help and help in the ways that you needed were a common theme in what you experienced. And can we just touch on some other ways in which the way he treated you manifested itself in following on from that period and led up to you, this period where you went to the GP? Sounds like, I know there'll be lots of examples, if you want to just talk us through a few of those.
So I didn't know that these were red flags for a long time, but it would be things like, I'd want to go out and meet a friend and was just always made to be difficult. I remember going to meet a friend of mine who I'd not seen for a long time. She was in Brighton, because that's where we live when we had Tilly. She was in Brighton for a course, and I went to meet her for a cup of tea, and I remember getting a phone call from my ex-husband. I should just say my partner, because he was at the time, obviously, not my ex-husband then, but, and asking me to come back. And I was like so disappointed that I had to cut short this time with someone, a really good friend, and because he couldn't get her to sleep, apparently. But I don't think he actually tried. It was just, and again, I feel for a partner who thinks that they can't get a child to sleep because they don't have the boobs that the baby needs or whatever. But in my opinion, he didn't try. He didn't take her out for a walk. He didn't do what he could have to give me some more time. It was always, you're needed. There was never any kind of, you go and have some time, babe, have a great time. It was just one thing after another. I remember going up to London to see a friend. And again, just upon leaving, no well wishes of have an amazing time, you deserve it, just like a really grumpy face. And there was a part of me that was just like, oh God, are they going to cope? Oh, fuck it, I should stay. I should just stay, they need me. But then there was a part of me that was like, I absolutely have to have this breathing space. It's only fair. And again, like I said about not being seen or heard, expressing how my day was. And if I did, I was probably gaslit. I didn't know the term gaslighting then, but a lot of my feelings were invalidated. I remember, because I knew I needed help in different ways, which money's a real big wound for me. And I feel like mentioning that now because he was financially controlling, and I funded the different things that I needed help with myself. So I don't need necessarily my partner to say, I'll pay for this, I'll pay for that, left and centre. When I realised I needed help, I had a closing the bones session with a lovely postnatal doula, which was a lovely ritual. She came over and massaged my hips and bound up my pelvis. And then she said, you go to bed, and she let herself out. And then there was a hypnotherapist friend that was training, and she came over and did a session with me. And yet again, the grumpiness. We were in our sitting room, and he came in, or he was in the flat, and we ran over because she was kind and gave me some more time. And I came out, and she left, and he was so grumpy that he hadn't been allowed in the sitting room. It is so pathetic to vocalize this. And I remember recounting it to someone else, just being like, sorry, what? It's not like you were outside the flat in the rain. You were in the flat. You had to be in the bedroom. I was in the sitting room because it made sense for a guest coming over to be in the sitting room with me. But I overran, and he gave me the shittiest look. And there was just no welcome back to, like, how was that, my love? Was it good? Did you enjoy it? I don't know. Yeah, nothing like that. It was just all the time about how I'd inconvenienced him. And at a point, I realised how desperately toxic and sad that is. Talk about narcissists to just only focus on oneself. Yeah, just so almost childish. No, that's insulting to children. I don't know. Just so not fair, not cool.
It sounds like you were advocating for yourself in terms of you almost knew what needs, you take it, how to take care of your needs, closing the bone ceremony and the various in the osteopath and things like that. And it sounds like you were blocked constantly in doing that and taking that time, being made to feel guilty, the toxicity in that he reacted with grumpiness. And I just wanted to touch on how that, you use the term gaslighting, and I'm glad you said that so we can clarify that. And I'm not an expert in domestic violence and these phrases, but I want to bring them to the consciousness here of domestic violence, again, isn't about always about physical abuse. It's about the things that you're talking about, and so the things that you've said here, and just a constant drip of invalidating your needs, not supporting you, making you feel guilty, not supporting you with your needs, and that constant being made to feel bad about yourself. And just to really summarize, if I've done that in a good way to explain that, Lucy, because obviously this is something that you've experienced and have a lot more knowledge of, and I want listeners to know that this might bring up red flags in them. So at the end, we'll, in the show notes, we'll pop some resources in there for anybody that's listening, that's experienced or thinking, okay, that's bringing up something for me here. So thank you for explaining in such detail for everybody here. Mm. So let's move on to, we talk about the catalyst and the breakthroughs, and these aren't almost necessarily one moment that happens and then you move on, but this can happen over a period of time. So let's talk about if there was a particular moment that helped you move through. And we did talk about that before, where you went to the GP and you said to your friend, we either separate or it's suicide. And those moments that brought you from there to starting to thrive in motherhood, going from not even really surviving, it was just about surviving or hanging on, isn't it? How you move through that.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, I shall. Is it okay? I just want to go back and mention a couple of other things as well as the grumpiness, if that's okay. Just because there are a couple of things that might help illustrate to people what isn't helpful, what isn't okay. So whenever I had a yoga workshop or something, for some reason, he would always cause an argument. So I would tend to leave the house ready to go and hold space for a good few hours for a workshop I was hosting. And he'd just been really nasty. I don't know how it happened to be all like regularly with those things. And then also when going to a friend's party or a friend's wedding party, reception, if that's what you call it, again, it caused an argument. And I felt so fed up that I couldn't go out. And I think that was his aim, so that I didn't go out. I didn't get to socialize. I didn't get to keep my friendships in strong as they could have been. It was the coercion. It was just the kind of, what am I going to do? Like when you go out, and I don't know, I would just always love time to myself. Aside from him being not very helpful and quite a tricky energy to be around, I think time by yourself is really healthy, but it was the coercive control that was tricky as well. And it was just like, no way do I feel like going out to a party now. You just deflated me massively. And thankfully, I was able to still go and teach my workshop. I had to, and it was very uplifting to be around lovely people and teach yoga and stuff. But to come back to your question, the different things that helped me to realise I was able to rise, one of them was probably, yeah, going to the doctor. Going to the doctor helped me to share the weight of what was going on. I remember just erupting into tears, and I was able to go without Matilda. I had to have Matilda with me for most things because he was always working or busy or something like that. But thankfully, obviously, I was able to go and have this proper release without Matilda. So therefore, the tears came up, and the doctor asked me questions like, would you say he's this? Would you say he's that? And I'm like, actually, yeah, I didn't realise, but it is. It's not helpful, or it's toxic and slightly dangerous, perhaps. Passive aggressive was a term that the doctor used. And again, I just had so much empathy, so much empathy. I was like, I think we need couples counselling. But really, I can just see that I wasn't being treated right. Couples counselling helped a little bit when we did finally get it, but not really. More the fact that I needed to get out. I don't think it was a situation that could have been helped. I was able to talk to and listen to the words of good friends who helped me to realise that I shouldn't be treated that way. I don't blame my family for what happened, but this is something that I've mentioned before to, I don't know who, but I wasn't instructed or advised to leave from my family because they didn't know really the depth of what was going on. Perhaps I was masking it, but also I don't think, if you don't have high self-esteem, if you don't know that such and such behavior isn't okay, then you're not going to go loose, this isn't okay. So my what do you call it, my ability to take a load of crap was because my self-worth wasn't great. My self-worth is pretty unshakable now because I've done an awful lot of work on myself in the last few years. But before that, I was like, no, it's okay. The fact that my ex-husband like had 3 trips in 1 year and I didn't have any. He went on a stag do, he went on a cricket tour, he went on a skiing holiday, all within 1 year. And me at home, working my socks off to build my business with our child, did not go away. It's a little bit of an imbalance there, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
It's insane, and I don't know why I put up with it. I was in a different state, different place to where I am now. Now I'd be like, you have to be joking. It just wouldn't happen. It just wouldn't happen if we were together now. But yeah, thankfully I had some good friends who were really quite spiritually connected, I think, and knew that was it. One of the things, I have a friend called Scott, and I remember him telling me, I think you're a highly sensitive person, Luce. And he had a book on his shelf about HSPs. Yeah. And now I know that I am. And I don't see it as a bad thing. I see it as a great thing. It helps me in so many different ways. It's challenging at times. My ex-husband would always be like, oh, you're so sensitive. And my family had said that as well. Not in such a nasty way, my family. But yeah, it had always been seen as a bad thing and a poke at me. But actually, I am sensitive. And that's not a bad thing. But I remember Scott helping me realise that's who I was. And that my ex-husband's behaviour was deeply harming, really. And I remember, thankfully, listening to all sorts of good friends who were probably a bit more alternative, less cognitive, more feely, more heart and gut-led. And that's where my ears pricked up to begin to realise that this wasn't something I could carry on with. And it still took me a long time after those chats to leave. And I've written one of my poems said I stayed too long. I feel like in a way I did stay too long because a lot of harm was caused. And it's still hard now sometimes remembering how I was treated. But I stayed ages to try and help him, to try and help our relationship. But in the end, I just had to break free and I had to go. But one example that I remember, this is how you can probably sense how unhealthy the relationship was. So I went to Chelsea Flower Show with my mum one time. I think Tilly was probably 3 maybe, and I remember feeling like I would get a phone call saying come home, because I just felt it was so positively illegal to be allowed to be out in London a couple of hours from my daughter having a nice time. It just felt so uncomfortable. I was in a dress, it was a sunny day, I was with my mum, and I just remember thinking something is going to burst this bubble. And it was because time after time, my fun was spoiled, you could say. I was needed, but was I? It was just horrible to think about, like my inability to be free and have a nice time. Does that make sense?
It absolutely makes sense, yeah. Thank you, Lucy. You share so eloquently and you're so deeply connected to your emotions. It's really your superpower as a HSP empath, if you're that one step further. That's what I love about you. You always bring your whole self to everything and describe things with such emotion and feeling. And so I just want to go back and again, just acknowledge that journey you went through going to your doctor. And it sounds like your doctor actually was spotted the signs and was the first one to kind of prick you into that awareness of okay, is it, this might be coercive control. I don't know if he actually used it. And it was a male doctor that you saw, wasn't it? A bit.
Yeah.
And then that awareness really was then leading you through to the reality and then speaking to friends. And so moving through then speaking to friends and acknowledging it, becoming aware of it. But I obviously understand that it isn't an immediate process. After then, even when Tilly was three, this was still happening and you were in awareness of consciousness that this is happening and there was coercive control, but at that point you were still together by the sound of it. So what were the next steps and how did you move through and build that self-worth that you said is so unshakable now, but you obviously at that point you were needing to build it up. So what steps did you take to build that up?
One thing I've just remembered, it was friends saying so, but also I went to see a Reiki lady who I'd seen probably just for some light relief, because I was not right relief because I was so fragile. And I was so fragile because I was in such a horrid place. I remember going to Denise, and I still see her now, which is so lovely. Although she's in, I think it's Shoreham and I'm in Reading, we can still work virtually. But I went to her, lay on her couch. She gave me a gorgeous treatment, some crystals on my body as well. And she said, "You're in an abusive and controlling relationship." And I remember just going, I can see that. I can see what she means. And it was great because she's partly psychic as well. It was great. So she could feel that from my body. She could feel what my body was holding. And I was like, oh my God, it's so great to have someone who's so wise and older and really gets that's what my body's fucking presenting with. I can remember because I ran to the session and ran back because probably I wasn't allowed out for long, that kind of stupid feeling. But I remember running back thinking, that's fascinating. That's really confirmed what I thought. And I was already at this point, like Googling on my phone, signs of domestic abuse or signs of emotional abuse, that kind of thing, and ticking the boxes in my head. Yep, yeah, I've got that. I've got that. I've got that. But sorry, I've forgotten your question.
That's okay.
How
are you building up yourself? How are you building up your self-worth? What the steps so we can have some kind of tangible examples?
So I would say listening to podcasts has helped me massively. Listening to Mark Groves really helped me sort of acknowledge what was and wasn't okay. Because I think he calls himself a human connection specialist. I remember hearing things through what he said and realizing what I had been putting up with and shouldn't be and what's a healthy way to communicate and that kind of thing. One of the other things I knew I needed to help me that I booked for myself was a transformational breath workshop in London. I went with this knowing that I was going to bawl. I'd read about it. It was a lady who used to come to the gym I used to work at who was running the workshops, and it just sounded so profound, like a real sort of cleansing thing to do. So I went up knowing that I was going to cry, probably letting go of some of the birth trauma, probably letting go of some of the emotional abuse. And that was a bit like an exorcism, really. It's a fascinating process. You breathe in a certain way and then your physiology shifts. I'm not really going to be great at explaining this because I'm not a breath practitioner, but it basically helped to get a ton of the feeling out and things coming out of my tissues that my body was storing. So that was another thing that really helped me. Reading, brilliant books. Untamed is definitely one of them. Untamed by Glennon Doyle is probably one of my favourite books. Brené Brown's work, that's really helped me as well to continue expressing my vulnerability and to not change who I am. Because I think for years growing up and with my ex-husband, I was met with people just going, oh, you're so sensitive, and not really getting me. But I think reading material like that helped me to be very accepting of who I am and to not change. Because there are, to be honest, there are different people throughout my life who've gone, Luce, never change. Like, you're really, you've got a certain special way about you. And so I'd be treated like crap by certain people. But then there'd be other people who'd write, like, in a leaving card, like, your smile lights up the world and you've got a lovely energy, don't change for anyone, that kind of thing. I think that kind of thing stuck in my head. So I knew I didn't need to change the essence of me. I just needed to improve my boundaries. And actually, boundaries is a massive topic, I think, has helped me so much to work on that. I remember someone saying boundaries of steel has really helped her. And so I got this book called Boundary Boss after hearing Terry Cole, the author of the book, talking to Mark Groves, and that's helped me. Boundaries with my ex-husband, boundaries with my family, so helpful to work on. And to be honest, like, my own work, my own movement, going for runs in nature, those have been incredibly healing. Time on my yoga mat, tears, yeah, lots of my own ways of moving. Dancing has been incredibly liberating. I think I've eased a lot of the pain and found my freedom through movement and dance. That's a huge thing for me.
Love that. And I love your dancing that I've seen lots of. It's wonderful. And it sounds like throughout this experience, there have been people peppered through this journey that have given you the strength to face what was happening, the realities, and to really show you your strengths. And it sounds like that support from most people has really been peppered through. And what support networks do you have today? Which are they, individual people? What support networks do you have helping you today and continuing to support you and your self-worth?
It's a really good question. I am so deeply grateful for a wonderful boyfriend now. We've been together a year and a half. I have a wonderful best friend called Naomi who lives 2 minutes from me. We're very close. My relationship with my family is tricky, so I wouldn't say them massively. I did get help from my mum last week when I needed it, but we have a very challenging relationship in certain ways. So I know some people can call on their family. For me, there's been massive betrayal there, so still working on how to get on with them, to be honest. It's a tricky one. And I do have really good school friend, Dan. And then also I met a guy and a girl who I work with. We ran a retreat in January and we've got close very quickly. So they're my little, it's like a little love triangle. We're so supportive of one another. So they're profoundly supportive as well. I call it framily on Queer Eye. I heard the term framily. So friends can turn to family. So yeah, I do have a wonderful little network of people who I know I can be in any mood whatsoever. And my friend Tasha actually in Scotland. Yeah, I've got a lovely little network of people who totally accept me exactly as I am, even if it's grumpy as hell, because I'm in pain, and they know that and I can say that.
What a wonderful gift to have those people that really get you, Lucy. Now, I can see how much, because we're on a video call here, I can see your face. I can just see how much they mean to you, and yeah, that's really beautiful. So how do you thrive in motherhood now? What do you do on a daily basis, weekly basis, monthly basis to support yourself to continue to thrive and move forward?
I have to take such good care of myself. I love coming back to what Glennon Doyle says in a book or a podcast. She says, be prepared to disappoint everyone but yourself. Because if someone invites me to something and I say yes, or I say no, or I say yes, then I have to say no. And I feel bad for letting people down. And I think that's something that I had to come to terms with as a mum, the fact that I couldn't be on time for things, or I couldn't go to everything. But just knowing at the end of the day, as long as me and Tilly are okay, then that's all that matters. And if someone is bitchy or grumpy, then it says more about them than me. Because sometimes I just cannot go to something, whether it's anxiety, whether Tilly is challenging because she's had a tricky week. I need to be the biggest empath towards myself and my daughter. And that's what's helped really in the last few years when I've had to. It's been mentally rebuilding our life after leaving my husband and things like that. Yeah, I have to do what suits me. I know that sounds selfish, but I do believe we have to be selfish as mums to not burn out and to not spread ourselves too thin. And especially if you're an HSP or an empath, because you're going to care so much about others to your own detriment sometimes, but you have to come back and refill your cup time and time again. Especially if you're energetically sensitive, I think, because whether it's world issues or the moon or your menstrual cycle affecting you, I'm just so much more intuitive now as to what me and Tilly needs. I feel like definitely prioritise sleep more, eating well. All of these things matter so much. Have to be, and I have to be on it, because since everything dramatic happened 2.5 years ago and I left my husband, I have been very unwell. And so I have to look after my health, because if I feel it tipping, I just know that it has to be pull the brakes, lots of rest, amp up the vitamin C, I don't know, different things, reducing my energy expenditure on people that I know don't fully appreciate me, that kind of thing. And I've learned that because I was bedridden for a week on 2 separate episodes in the last 2 years. That was my body going, stop, supreme stress. Yeah. I do my utmost to look after mine and Matilda's emotional health, because I think as a society, we can override that. We can force, we can coerce. You can be coercive to yourself. Go on, you can manage it. Actually, no, I'm not going to. I'm just going to chill or sit in my cuddle chair and soothe my senses.
I love that cuddle chair. I love that chair. I've not heard that before.
I love that. I love it. Cuddle chair. So lovely.
And I think that I completely agree with you. We're made to feel selfish for looking after ourselves, having boundaries, looking after ourselves and our children, putting ourselves and our children first, or sometimes ourselves when it's with regard to our children first. And that's a huge part of this podcast. And we're talking about the damaging narrative of the intensive mothering myth and how being self-sacrificing is a huge part of that. And there's so many examples there that you've given of you've been bedridden those 2 separate times in the past couple of years, and just shows really how we can, like you said, coerce ourselves, push ourselves to burnout, and then we're made to feel like we're being selfish for actually take many steps before that, taking the time to actually say, no, I can't do this and I can't do that. So thank you for giving us those really tangible examples. And I understand it's not just as easy as saying, I'm going to put boundaries in place. I'm going to look after myself. I'm going to put myself first. I'm going to say no to things. But we can see how doing those things can really help us. There's obviously a lot of work to do before that. So thank you, Lucy. And it's lovely to see your friend was right. You have such a beautiful smile. You have such a beautiful energy. And you're such a huge example of what a really damaging experience that relationship ended, by the sound of it, 3 years ago when Tilly was 5. That period of time, what damage it had on you and how you've moved through. And I'm not saying there's an end point, you're not completely healed. There's obviously some healing to continue and things trigger us, but you're just a beautiful example of how we can thrive in motherhood coming from those experiences. So my last question to you is, what would you say to that younger version of Lucy, that newborn mother version of Lucy?
You're going to be okay. And you're doing great. Because I was faulted a lot. Yeah. And also to know that I did my best, because I felt like my body had failed me for a long time. Because birth didn't progress the way I thought it would.
Wow. Thank you, Lucy. No, it's been an absolute honour to speak to you. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story. There's potentially a lot that might have come up from this for people, and I will put some links in the show notes. And could you just tell our listeners where people can find you?
Sure, yeah. So my website is thebirthrecoverycoach.com. On Instagram, I am The Birth Recovery Coach, and on Facebook, I am The Birth Recovery Coach.
Lovely. You have such deep feeling, deep empathy. I love the way that you shared your story so openly and honestly. And again, it's been an honour. Thank you.
It's been an honour too. And thank you so much for having me. Thank you for holding space, because you have a beautiful way about you too. So I think the way I've been able to share is very much partly due to how you are. So thank you very, very much.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoy this conversation and would like to support the podcast so we can reach as many mothers as possible, please share it with your mama friends or leave a rating and review. Sign up to the Confident Comeback newsletter, your regular dose of honesty, support and inspiration for navigating your return to work. And with no hustle harder or productivity hacks in sight, head over to my website, motherhood.co.uk, for more information. See you next time.